On today's show, a spacecraft crash lands on Mars, and we have the aerial photos to prove it. Elon Musk buys Twitter, unleashes a free speech freakout, and reveals the importance of freedom of speech. And is The Bad Guys a good movie? This is Pinhole Talk Radio. Welcome back to the show. Thank you for joining us again. I trust you had a productive week. My name is Brian Constein. I am here with my co-host, Michael Rowland.
Hello, hello.
And on to the show we go. Let's start in Penhold. Now, they did have another council meeting. I didn't get a chance to watch this one online or attend it. I was instead taking line drives off my shin from 10-year-olds. So those are a little sore now. But if you go to the town website, they have links to the agenda for the recent meetings, the upcoming meetings. They have the minutes from the past ones, but they also provide a package of all kind of the different elements that they're going to talk through, the different decisions they're going to make. But they also provide a kind of a report. Each kind of different segment of town provides a report. So you have a multiplex report, you have a report from community services,
right?
And the CAO report, the chief administrative officer. And so it gives you a little bit of a recap of, if you missed it, this kind of gives you their talking points, what they mentioned as they were going on through the meeting. And so just kind of run through that, because I know not everyone enjoys reading through that kind of stuff. A couple of things that they, I guess, highlighted in the meeting was, of course, DQ is opened. I think most people, probably all our listeners, have gone there at least once now.
Old news now.
Yeah, that's old news. still good news, but old news.
Yeah.
New news is the car wash. If you're still waiting, if that is your thing, the car wash across kind of Kitty Corner to the multiplex looks like they're aiming for a May opening.
Wow.
Yeah.
That so sounds like it's coming pretty fast.
Yeah. It's all those concrete prefab kind of buildings, you know, just Lego block them in place.
Yeah.
And off you go. Yeah. They're aiming for a May opening for that one. The other thing is that, as we talked about a few episodes ago, there's a new school that is being planned for Penhold. Mm-hmm. And so they're kind of in the planning process of that. And so that, they're still planning on putting it, on the south side of the bus loop.
Right.
And so one thing that's kind of interesting is that they had to submit a letter to get a variance from a previous landfill. Did you know there's landfill?
I had no idea.
So where the ballpark is around that area used to be apparently an old landfill.
Really?
Yeah. And so if you look on kind of the town, you know, those topographical or architectural map, I can't forget. I remember what the official name is of it. But you look at the official administration mapping of town, and they actually label it as, I forget what it's, I think it's a reclaimed landfill.
Huh.
And so because it's a reclaimed landfill, there's regulations about how far away you have to build from it.
Right. Yep.
And so if you want to build closer than those regulations, you have to submit permission to get a variance. So basically permission to say you can breach this regular boundary.
And so never knew they did a pretty decent job of filling it in and making it invisible.
I have no idea what the time frame is on that, but there's a little bit of Penhold history there. Apparently it was a official landfill at one point.
And now we want to build a school on it.
Well, not yet. It's still, no. That's right. I'm more concerned about it being kind of more of a floodplain area than the previous landfill, but
yeah,
So that old landfill is still affecting kind of how the whole town is administered, which is kind of just interesting. Those weird regulatory things that goes on behind the scenes and you just don't know about it.
Yeah.
That's just part of the planning process that's still ongoing.
One of the many steps.
Yep. So they're apparently they've kind of gone through different school. Yeah, they've toured a number of schools to kind of get design ideas.
Right.
So that's something that's in progress. Other events coming up this week. The FCC or FCSS. And if you're not familiar with this, this is the Family and Community Support Services.
Yeah.
And they run a whole bunch of family oriented events throughout town. Oftentimes they'll partner up with they're closely linked with the town and with the library, a lot of events going on there. So from May 2nd to 8th, they're doing a mental health week. And so I bring this up because their theme is let's chalk about it. And so at least one thing I think they're trying to aim is get all those sidewalk chalks out of the basement and then put positive messages on your sidewalk. So
yeah.
If you're looking for an excuse to kick your kids outside in the afternoon,
give them some chalk and tell them to write some happy notes.
Stop insulting your brother. Go out and write something happy on the sidewalk. Get out of here. So you can do that this next week. Let's see. The other thing that I found quite interesting. So last week, or actually, sorry, about 3 weeks ago now. They had the Easter extravaganza.
It was kind of the first big town event to bring people to for a very long time. Basically, probably since Fall Festival.
Yeah,
it was the last time they had a significant public event.
Yeah, yeah, they're saying it's been over 2 years, and so like even with the Fall Festival event, you still had restrictions in place. Like you still had to mask up if you went indoors.
Yeah, there was still some stuff going on, and yeah, it was all outdoors.
Yeah.
So this was our first town event that they could hold in the gymnasium. They could do it as the way they used to do these events.
Yep. And so apparently it was quite a successful event.
It was crowded.
The report says that over the 2 hours that ran, so it ran from 12 to noon, it says nearly 375 people came and visited the multiplex and enjoyed the wagon rides. Though if it was a little breezy, a little chilly,
it was windy. Outside. My family didn't do the wagon rides. We got there, saw the wagon, and thought we probably should have dressed warmer for that. So we just went inside.
Probably a good idea. But inside, the report goes on. And if you've ever gone to a town event, you know the most popular booth every time, like without fail, is the face painting.
Yeah, always. Everywhere.
Yeah, it's like a Disney lineup. I'm assuming. I've never been to Disney World, but that's why there's always line there.
Yeah.
There's no point in which you can say, "Oh, I'll wait for the line to get smaller." Kind of time.
No,
it just doesn't happen. But anyways. Apparently it was even worse than usual, because the report says that in the end the event was over budget due to extra charges for balloon artists and glitter tattoo artists to accommodate the people who had unexpectedly appeared in their lines and refused to leave without glitter tattoos and balloon creations. There's some really, I guess, passionate people about getting their kids face painted.
Get to that point though, when you're standing there in line with your kid and you've been there for 30 minutes, you have to make that decision. Am I committed to this or am I going to walk away and give up that half hour? We just stood here.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of people, they'd stood there for so long waiting in that line. They're like, well, I'm committed. I'm doing this.
Yeah.
I don't care if we hold them here. We're doing this.
So apparently the report says, you know, you have a single parent stand in place for like three or four kids.
Yeah.
You'd cut the line off somewhere, hopefully. And then lo and behold, you're like, oh shoot, the line just got like three times longer as all these kids now rush in. So apparently the balloon artist and the face painters were there for like almost another hour after this thing closed.
Yeah.
I don't know. It sounds like there could have been a little bit better handling that from citizens, perhaps, according to this report. But I thought it was there's a bit of humor as well in there. There's so many passionate face painters in there.
Yeah. But it was good. It was a good.
Yeah, it sounds like overall, it looks like a really well attended event.
Good chance to get out with the family and do something that we haven't been able to do.
Yeah.
So that was awesome.
As far as money goes, the council at the last meeting also went over tax rates. Now there's a handout. Apparently, if you're in person, there's a handout. I don't see it in the package provided, so I can't relay what the new tax rates, property tax rates, will be. But I think they're aiming to keep it at nil as far as raising or lowering it. We're very minimal. But we'll see if we can get numbers on that in the next week or so. And then also, it's also bill time apparently for the city, because we just got our $100,000 bill for policing. That doesn't include, that's not bylaw. Bylaw officers.
That's towards the RCMP.
Provincial, yeah. So yeah, it is almost exactly $100,000 for policing costs for the town. So just think about that's just one of the big chunks of your taxes are going towards.
And it's just supposed to keep growing. Unless things change, they're expecting those numbers to keep rising for the next several years.
Yep. Yeah, so it looks like it was a full council meeting report that was going on. There are lots of things going on, and that's skipping over some things. Because, of course, yeah, the Bullarama is coming up on the 14th. They're going to be putting down dirt behind the Pennell Tavern to host this thing.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
I still can't figure out how it's going to work. I haven't seen their plan. I'm told that the organization doing this has presented a very detailed plan and got it all approved by council and whoever else is involved. And apparently it looks like it's going to work, but logistically I drive by that tavern and look at it and no idea how they're going to pull this off.
Yeah. They can put monster trucks inside, ice rinks. So, seems like the same kind of gist there. And I guess the last little event I'll promote out there for selfish reasons, because it's a little bit of my side job, is to kind of the communications and ads and graphics for the library. But this is an event that I can get completely behind. Through the month of May, the library is running this blockbuster bingo. And so if you go on the library website, penholdlibrary.ca, and go to the events, you'll see it there. And there's a bingo sheet there with different kind of categories of movies that you can watch and then check off. And and as you fill in the row, you get entries into a draw for some movie themed prize. Because I think it was one of our first few episodes, we talked about how the library has DVD and Blu-ray services.
Yeah, something so many people don't realize is there. They've got a pretty good selection of stuff. And of course, being interlibrary stuff, you can order in. So you can go on the site and you can find a TV series or a movie. And if they don't have it here, they'll get it for you.
Yeah. It's quite nice. I've used it actually quite a lot recently. And so, you put in your order online, or you can probably phone up and get it done. Put in the request, and about a week later, it's at the library for you to pick up. Now, the bonus thing worth noting here is if you actually go in and check out a movie from the library, they'll give you some free popcorn, like a free microwave popcorn to take home and watch.
Really?
And use with the movie. But yeah, there's your little tip. So yeah, there's the rundown of what's happening in Penhold. Now, in other news, and normally we kind of expand out from Penhold. Right now, I want to actually jump out to Mars, if you don't mind.
Sounds interesting.
If you got no other stops along the way, there's an article that I came across on Petapixel. It's kind of more of a camera website, and the reason that they're showing, or the reason that this is on a camera and photo review kind of website, is the headline says NASA in Ingenuity helicopter captures spacecraft wreckage on Mars. Now just absorb what was just said to you, okay? just absorb that. So NASA Ingenuity helicopter captures spacecraft wreckage on Mars. Okay, we have aerial coverage of a wreckage of a spacecraft on Mars back here on Earth now. We have images of this. So I forget what, or how, it was about a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, NASA sent the Mars rover named Perseverance to Mars. And it's been cruising around there, but a special package was that was along with the Perseverance rover was a helicopter, basically a drone that they named Ingenuity. And now NASA, I don't know why I say we.
Part of the human race. When you're talking about like, another seriously? Planet, it's we on this planet and that other planet. So we are we.
I know, but yeah, at the same time, it's like, yeah, we went to the moon. Like, I didn't really have anything to do with that. Like, it feels like it's a bit self-serving there, almost stealing. Like, yeah. But yeah, so they brought a drone, a mini helicopter essentially out there. And just as a little kind of backstory on it, it's very interesting because you just can't bring, your DJI mini drone out there and let it unfold because the atmosphere is different. The temperature is different. Yeah. The weather conditions. And so the air is thinner on Mars. And so you actually have to calculate that in how fast you can spin your blades to get the proper lift. Like it was an incredible achievement.
Yeah, it's a whole different thing than having a rover that's rolling around on the surface. Right. Like obviously you have to account for terrain with that, but trying to fly in a completely different type of environment is a very different thing to calculate and get right.
Yeah, yeah. And just think about the difference between just something kind of crawling across the ground and something actually flying. Like so many different parameters come into play when that happens. But nonetheless, so when the Perseverance rover landed, part of the landing process is jettisoning some of the things that were required for say entry into the atmosphere. And so they've navigated back to the crash site of some of those pieces and brought this helicopter along and flew it up. And then they got aerial shots now of this, of the shrapnel that's left over. You can see part of the wreckage there. And then you can see off in the distance, there's actually a wider shot that includes the landing parachute for part of it.
That is amazing.
Yeah, like so that's what I mean. We have aerial photos from a spacecraft wreckage on Mars. So this is the human race is a remarkable thing. I just get kind of every now and then we have to like pause and just think about how remarkable it is that we can do that. We can fly things from Earth that are on a different planet altogether. Like even it takes something like 11 minutes to send a radio signal out there to communicate.
Yeah.
Let alone the 11 months I think it takes to actually travel out there.
Yeah, and I don't think many people grasp just how big of a distance these things are. Like something I came across again recently is that apparently if you take all the planets in our solar system and put them side by side, it would still only reach the moon.
It's actually, I was going to say the sun was, but yeah, you're right. It's the moon. Yeah. You can all the,
and that's including big planets like Jupiter. These distances are huge. And we're talking about flying a drone and having photo sent back from Mars.
Yeah.
It is incredible.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, that's right. You can put all the planets in between here and the moon. Like it communicates how big and how small things are at the same time. Like you think of planets as huge, but yet it seems like the moon's like right there.
Yeah.
There's kind of weird.
The relativity of space, like Jupiter is massive compared to the Earth. But we can still fit all those planets, Jupiter included, between us and the moon. Like
there's just absolutely remarkable. So much space. Yeah, the other kind of another one I've heard is like it's improbable that two things, and like if you have galaxies that actually merge together, it's unlikely anything will actually hit.
Yeah,
because there's just so much space there.
Which makes all those old sci-fi shows absolutely ridiculous when you'd have two ships come across each other in space.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. No.
Remarkable feat. I thought that was worth bringing to your attention, just as a bit of lightness before we get into a little more heavier stuff, which we will now turn to. So back here on Earth, in fact, back here in Alberta, I don't know how many people are aware of this story, but Dr. Hinshaw, the chief medical officer that you've probably seen countless news or press conferences now.
2 years of seeing her regularly presenting to the public.
And I would not want her job. I'll just say that up front. But she's been testifying in a court case over the last probably week or so now. Like, the case itself, I think, started around 2021, first part of that. It might even started near the end of 2020. But this was a court case brought on by some churches and individuals related to a lot of lockdown procedures that were put in place. And they basically are asking the courts to weigh in on whether or not these are constitutionally and charter justified infringements.
Yeah.
And like I said, so this started back in, I'm going to guess 2020, because I think it's dragged on for a while. And through hoops and delays, and there's so many different avenues to talk on this topic. But anyways, I bring this up because, again, not a lot of people know about it, but it was just this last week in the Calgary Herald brings the headline that judge rules Hinshaw not protected by cabinet confidentiality in case questioning COVID-19 restrictions. So for a long time, basically for these last 2 years, how it would go is that a certain cadre, certain close group of UCP politicians and Hinshaw would meet and kind of discuss and come up with a plan for the different lockdowns, procedures, restrictions that would go in place. And a lot of times, Hinshaw herself would claim that there is this cabinet confidentiality. So basically, whatever is said in that room stays in that room. And the idea is it's meant to facilitate open dialogue.
Yeah. So they'll come out of that discussion with the publicly presentable information, but you don't pick out the things that random are said by each individual in that room and start condemning them for their statements or their arguments. It compiles into one publicly approved statement.
Well, yeah, you can see the utility of it. Yes. And like, especially nowadays with politicians and social media just being this kind of got you kind of mentality, and that and any idea that you're just kind of throw out there for consideration is just picked up and twisted in so many negative ways. So yeah, I think there's a spot where politicians have to have a space to be able to talk openly without fear of, you know, ridicule.
Yeah.
Now there's this time for that, but there's, in this case though, the judge in this case says that Alberta's chief medical officer of health can't claim cabinet confidentiality to prevent divulging some of her closed door recommendations on COVID-19 restrictions, the judge has ruled. So basically the idea is, and the media has wanted to know this probably for a while, is how closely did the cabinet, the elected officials, follow the recommendations of Hinshaw?
Yeah.
Now, it's not the media bringing this case, but this might be one angle where they are interested in it, though they've been quite kind of hush on bringing this whole court case to light. But the judge here ruled that he says, quote, or she says, quote, in the context of this specific evidence and this specific case, the public interest in disclosing Dr. Hinshaw's answers to the questions posed by the court outweighs the public interest in keeping the evidence confidential, Romaine stated in the 7-page written ruling. So basically, yes, it's important that politicians can speak openly in confidence with one another in certain circumstances, but in this case, the public's interest overrules that other good. And so it'll be interesting to see how this plays out in this court and see how the decisions play are made, because throughout other kind of similar cases in other provinces, we really haven't had this kind of openness into the decision-making process and kind of what was said behind closed doors. So we'll see how that goes out or plays out. Now, kind of as a parallel to that, this last week we saw the announcement of a public inquiry into the use of the Emergencies Act. This was the charter, basically the charter overruling. This is the nuclear legislation that was instituted by Prime Minister Trudeau in the middle of February during the trucker convoy.
Yeah.
And so part of that legislation, when it was enacted, requires there to be a public inquiry 60 days, I think, after it was announced. I think that's the timing of it. And so it was this last week that it was officially started. Special committee is appointed. They start asking questions of the officials involved. And so here, CTV has the headline, Justice Minister Invokes Cabinet Secrecy Around Use of Emergencies Act.
So they're using that justification of, we needed to have these discussions behind closed doors and we're not going to reveal.
Yeah. So yeah, the article opens up with saying Justice Minister David Laminetti repeatedly invoked cabinet confidentiality in his appearance before a special committee tasked with investigating the government's use of the Emergencies Act. Laminetti was asked pointed questions Tuesday evening about federal consultations with provinces and others before declaring an emergency, and when the government received advice to revoke the declaration. And on multiple occasions, he responded that he would not betray cabinet confidence. And later on, he also mentions that not only is there cabinet confidence issues, but he'll say that there's clients. He's as the attorney general. That's what the justice minister is, also the solicitor general, I think, is what that goes up here. So he's kind of the judge, or he's kind of the lawyer, as it were, for the country. So he's got this kind of client lawyer confidentiality, and then he's going to claim that there's also national security interests in place. So it'll be interesting to see how these two cases kind of parallel, if this one decision over here in Alberta plays out or has any precedence on what's going on with the Emergencies Act inquiry. But this seems to be more significant. Like, I want to know what kind of information they were dealing with to make that decision.
Yeah.
Especially when you invoke, or especially when you overrule the charter so aggressively and so completely as the Emergencies Act does. That's a question. Like, yeah, I want to get to the bottom of what that decision tree looked like. If there's issues involved there has to be some sort of reckoning if at the ballot box, if nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a point in the Hinshaw one that I found interesting that the questions posed to Dr. Hinshaw and the answers she gave do not reveal disagreements among ministers or the views of individual ministers. I think that is a pretty important perspective on it. Even like looking at the Emergencies Act one, to go in and reveal information without revealing the specifics of who was involved or any conflicts between individuals, then you're not throwing anybody under the bus. Sure. You're not putting anybody into the spotlight.
Yep.
You're just presenting the information that you used to come to the decision you came to.
Yep.
I think that that sounds like kind of the approach being taken right now with the Hinshaw one. And I think that is a logical way to go about this, because the public really needs to know,
at least needs how, to know more,
more information on how the decision was made.
Over these 2 years, there's been decisions made of such consequence that we just, this is just so uncharted territory for most of us.
And we don't need a word for word transcript. No, we don't need to know who said what specifically, but we need more information.
Yeah, I think one thing that you might end up seeing with the Emergencies Act is you can maybe have, say, a designated group, or at least the committee itself, may be sworn to some sort of secrecy, and they're given access to files, those secret,
so they can use that,
so they can see it, yeah,
information without actually
completely just revealing
the whole thing. Yeah,
so at least there's more eyes on it than just say the Liberal Party.
Yeah.
So there's at least people who have a counter philosophy on how government, and can actually kind of use that in their decision making in regarding this inquiry. That would at least be something.
Yeah.
That would hopefully see happen. Now, I'm going to connect all these stories in a second, but there's one more I want to get to before the kind of the big big story we'll go through, or at least the big idea, the big topic. Out in Hamilton, CBC is reporting on a story out of Hamilton of this flag being flown, and the headline reads: Confederate flag at Hamilton area home prompts calls for changes to hate law or hate symbol laws. And so what's going on here is we have the classic, probably when I say Confederate flag, most people know what I'm talking about. This is the Confederate flag. So it's the red backdrop with blue cross on it with stars on it. If you've watched Dukes of Hazzard,
General Lee
was on there, has on the roof. So this is, as most people probably know, this is the Confederate or the flag that was flown by the Confederates during the American Civil War.
Oddly enough, it wasn't even used much during the Civil War itself, but
it's what it's being connected with. And then later on, the article says that this has been now associated with white supremacist groups. I'm not going to take issue with those at this point or the history of the flag. Like I said, I'll tie this together. The article says that last summer, Hamilton city councilors voted to ban the flag, the Confederate flag, and the Nazi swastika from city property, classifying them as hate symbols. Police acknowledged that it was not a criminal offense to fly a Confederate flag on one's own property. It would only be considered a crime if an investigation revealed that placement of the flag was motivated by hate. So you can fly the flag if you want, but you can't fly it hatefully, I guess.
Seems a little bit subjective, but
yeah. And then later on in the article, so the CBC goes and asks the people, or goes knocks on the door of the home actually, and it says the person who answered the door, who didn't want to be named, said that they don't care what other people think, and so they don't think the flag was racist. They also said that they've been flying the flag for over 2 years and haven't had any prior complaints, and said other locals fly the flag. Quote, I fly that for freedom. That's my choice. I live in a free country, said the resident. The person continues on and says, quote, I am an individual and I have a right. It's not offensive. It's all how you choose to look at it. If I could afford the General Lee, I'd park it in the driveway. Honestly, yeah, it's a pretty cool car. It's,
the classic Charger?
Charger. And so, of course, this is getting the anti-hate groups up in arms. With their classic one or classic calls for increasing the hate laws. So basically, the police, they're saying the police, if they can't do this, then we need to change the laws that this gets banned. There has to be a law in place for this flag to be a criminal offense. They want this to be a criminal offense. They want essentially, in the end, you know, all laws have to be enforced with criminal. At the end, has to be enforced with some sort of jail time. Like, you can fine people, and if they don't get fined, you know, you might have to be able to take their income. Like, this can go a long ways if this is what you think a flag justifies. But that's what a lot of people are calling for. Now, I bring up these three stories because I want to tie them all in together under the concept of free speech. And this has really been kind of brought to the forefront by kind of the big news story of this week, is Elon Musk buying Twitter.
Oh,
if you're on the right, this has probably been a pretty fun week for you.
There's been a lot of amusing stuff with this. Seeing the, the fallout of those who don't like it, the cheering of those who do, and then Elon himself just having some fun with it.
Yeah, it didn't take long for a lot of reaction, a lot of dichotomous reaction. People on the right cheering this as a heralding free speech return. And then on the left, you had more of a free speech freakout, where you kind of see this perspective of free speech being dangerous and needs to be regulated. And that Twitter was kind of this threshold, this guardian of all things evil on the internet. Now, basically, Musk has bought the keys and he's going to unleash the jail gates of you know, internet hell or something like that, and out will come these demon spawns, and Twitter will just turn into this, you know, hellscape of free speech. I'm not overly exaggerating that. And then Elon Musk himself kind of plays into this in a tweet saying that he's playing into the fear of like that this is going to return all the bad things, that next he's going to quote, next I'm buying Coca-Cola to put cocaine back in it. So he's apparently having a pretty good time with that. But in the end, it really riled up this whole conversation around free speech and how much free speech do we want or need or is appropriate.
Yeah.
So in discussing free speech, I want to first start off with kind of an important court case in Canada. And actually, when I looked into it, it ties into Alberta. I never realized. This is a court case from 1990. It's called the Keegstra case. And in 1984, there was a teacher who was teaching some anti-Semitic views in a classroom. And the teacher happened to be an Eckville teacher, Eckville, Alberta. Yeah.
Not far at all.
And in fact, he actually turned out also to be the mayor at the same time. He was the mayor of Eckville and the teacher. And so it was brought out that in 1984, that he was teaching anti-Semitic views in the classroom. And so there was a case brought to against him. And he defended his rights to have these views, these hateful views, these anti-Semitic views. And so it went through the court system. And it wasn't until 1990 that we actually got a decision. So just as a side note, I know, so we're talking 6 years here. And just as a side note, and this is kind of to bring back last episode's conversation on the charter. And so before, the charter wasn't part of the Constitution, so it wasn't a thing that judges ruled on.
Right.
Now it's in the in the Constitution, so judges can rule on it. A consequence, though, is that these charter cases take forever to get through the court system. Now, if you're the government, you don't care. You don't care how long this takes, and you don't care how much it costs. You have an unlimited bank stream from the taxpayers to pay all your lawyer bills, and the court cases will just roll on themselves unless the government pulls the case. They'll just continue rolling on through different administrations or different governments as they're elected. They'll continue on. The individual on the other end of that court case, he's usually on his own. He has to foot his own bills. Yep. In many cases, especially when it's individuals against each other, or at least when there's two kind of parties that are involved, the losing party is actually on the hook for the legal bills of the other person.
Right.
So there's a significant cost in there. So there's at least one incentive or disincentive for the government to speed up court cases. If you are a citizen and you know it's going to take a decade to get through a court case,
you can't afford it.
You're just going to throw that. It's not worth that much of my life, even though it might be an incredibly important case and right that you want to defend, but you can't because it just takes so much time and money. But that's a side note. Like I said, 6 years to get through this. So finally, in 1990, the decision comes down. You know, it's a 4-3 decision. So it's a really split.
Pretty close.
Yeah. It's a really split decision that upholds the hate law provisions in the criminal law. So in sections 319, you see a couple restrictions or a couple provisions or laws that restrict hate speech. There's one on that restricts public incitement of hatred. So you can't say something hateful towards an identifiable group. So this is like, you know, you can't say something hateful towards a race, a religion, a minority, sex, gender right. identity, that kind of thing. You can't speak anything that would incite hatred towards an identifiable group. And you can't speak just hatred yourself towards an identifiable group. So this falls into that kind of second category.
Right. Yeah.
And the court found that those laws, those hate laws that ban hate speech actually restrict your Section 2 charter rights. So they infringe upon them. The Section 2 is the your right to freedom of expression.
Right. Yeah.
So they violate them, but they do so justifiably based on Section 1. Again, listen back to our last episode.
Yeah, that little clause that with justifiable reason, you can violate any of the charter rights.
Yeah, so if you can demonstrably justify that that there's a reasonable case to be made that this is not for the good of in a free and democratic society, that law gets restricted. Or that charter right, excuse me, gets restricted. Mm-hmm. So the hate laws infringe upon your freedom of expression, but they do so constitutionally in a justifiable manner. So that's in that court case, the justices actually kind of lay down a pretty high bar for freedom of expression. So this is from I'm taking most of these points and notes from different sources, and I'll have them all listed up on the website, like I usually do, penolddocradio.ca. I just won't be able to list them all. But this comes from constitutionalstudies.ca, that kind of in a recap of this Keekstra case, that the Supreme Court found that first, free expression is instrumental in promoting the free flow of ideas essential to democracy and the functioning of democratic institutions. Secondly, free expression is an essential precondition for the search for truth. And then thirdly, free expression is worth protecting for its intrinsic value to the self-realization of both speaker and listener. So we'll parse these out. I got 5 points that kind of build upon that, again, from other sources. That I think these are important to keep in mind when we're talking about free speech. This is... sometimes we can kind of cheapen this, or maybe not fully realize how important this is to be able to speak your mind. We're not just talking about you being able to say something, but what does that act of saying things actually do? It's usually there's a consequence to this. So the first point I want to point out is that free speech actually guards against corruption and abuse in government. So basically, if you have freedom of speech, it allows for criticism of higher power.
Right.
And just think about how often that has not been the case.
Yeah, you can name countries now. Never mind, looking back in history, but looking now at current time, there are a lot of countries in the world where you can't criticize the government.
Yeah.
You can't openly and publicly say things negative about the rulers.
Yeah. And think about all the perceptions and character of those kind of countries. Would you want to be in that kind of country? Would you want to live in those kind of situations? Yeah. So this kind of first element kind of highlights the significance of an independent press. This ability to kind of root out corruption in government, the average citizen doesn't really have the time and effort and expertise to do that. This is where the press comes in. And so if you want to kind of group or rank these in kind of hierarchy or kind of categories, freedom of expression is kind of a bigger term than freedom of speech. It kind of encompasses freedom of speech. Yeah. And then within freedom of expression as well is the freedom of the press. Now, how you want to group that with freedom of speech, it's all kind of in the same kind of category of things. So when I'm using these terms, I'm kind of putting them all together as a very similar thought. So freedom, even though our Constitution doesn't say freedom of speech specifically, we have freedom of expression, which would incorporate this.
Yeah.
The main difference, again, to go back to the previous episode, is that we have certain restrictions built into the charter that
the act override it.
Such as Section 1, as we just talked about. But in this case, freedom of speech guards against this corruption and abuse of government. It allows people to criticize, to root out bad politicians.
And that's always kind of been the role of the journalist.
Yeah.
The role of the journalist is to get out there and tell the story, whether people like it or not. And that includes government.
Especially, yeah, the more powerful the person, the more the press is role, I think, is important in that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so especially when it comes to kind of rooting out the corruption and the malfeasance in higher powers, the powers that the average citizen can't access, that's where press really should be focusing their work on.
Yeah.
And so, and I said, that's why it's important to have that independence from the press. And there's a lot of things that would suggest that the Canadian presses might be a little bit too beholden to the government here. So that's the first point. The second point, freedom is necessary for the functioning of democracy. Now, this kind of aspect, just kind of restate it, allows for opposing views to be expressed, or allows you, and as they're expressed, it allows you to vote for, to use your ability to present your opinion in the form of a vote. So in a place that cherishes freedom of speech, you allow different politicians to have different perspectives, to have them publicly.
Yeah. If you don't have that freedom, you can't even have somebody really running against the current government. So you can call it democracy because you have a vote.
That's right.
But you don't have a vote really because you don't have options. They're not made available because they can't speak against the current government. Like it,
yep.
It's kind of just a cycle where you can't get anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it doesn't just go for government. Like, this is for individuals to having different views. And that's becoming a tighter and tighter restriction on what is acceptable public opinion.
Yeah.
So this second point kind of, you can see, is kind of the basis and significance of protests. Think about how the protests were handled in last February with the trucker convoy. How important that voice was to be heard, and how reactions and the responses to it were. Like, there's some politicians calling that protest, illegal. Like, the protest itself was illegal. There's this white supremacists going on, there's racism going on, and they didn't really fully consider the critiques that this was, that the protest was offering.
Right.
And then in the end, that's where the Emergencies Act came in. This is an important component of free speech. You need to have opposing views heard. The third element of free speech is an important part of human liberty. Again, this is very similar. This allows for the communication and persuasion of ideas. And This is where I think Jordan Peterson is really good at highlighting some of this stuff. He talks about this idea, or he highlights, it's not his idea, but it's just, he's kind of the most prominent proponent of it at the moment. But it's in dialogue that you actually engage in the process of truth seeking.
Yeah.
If you're not able to engage or you're kind of hidden away from different perspectives, how do you know yours is the right one? You need to kind of measure it up against other things. It's this conversation, part of this podcast, if nothing else, is to have that conversation. For me, even just to speak out loud one's ideas and then hear a response back. Like, does this sound good to you? Like it does in my own head. Some people are really good at having those kind of internal conversations. But that's just basically doing the same thing that a lot of people, that needs to happen in kind of the public square. I think this is another reason why reading is so important. It opens your mind to these different ideas, or even just different ways of framing a thought or a belief that you already have. I just find it so interesting that you read and you come across a word, it's like, and then you look up the definition of the words, like, oh, I knew that thought. I had that belief. And now I have a word.
Something that can encapsulate that.
I didn't really know how to
meaningful way
communicate it. Yeah. There's a word that now fits that belief that I have, that idea. And so it facilitates communication. But when, if we lock down communication, we lock down free speech too much, that dialogue goes away. And I think everyone's the worst for it, because now you have a one-sided conversation.
Yeah.
There's no good faith conversations moving towards the truth in the end. That's where all, and you know, this is, you know, this is where persuasion kind of comes in. You have an idea, an argument, you throw it at me, I can come back with a counter argument. There's this tussle, is this argument that goes on. That's a healthy struggle with one another.
Yeah.
That ultimately hopefully moves us both to closer to what is true and what is real. And this is where free speech is so important. The more it's restricted, the less that conversation, the less that goal of moving closer to the truth is hindered. Fourth aspect, freedom of speech protects religious speech. Now, this is kind of, I almost kept this one out. It just seems like, this is maybe a special provision for, you know, the people who have a faith in a higher being or something like that. Of course, free speech is just a broader term for religious speech. It's just another type of speech.
Yeah.
Though I think this is important to highlight, that when you talk about religious speech, I think in this context, it's important to understand that we're not just talking about, you know, a Christian being able to proclaim the gospel or tell people about Jesus or something like that, or the Islam or the Muslim to talk about his religion. This is really your ability to express core fundamental ideas about reality. This is the protection that you need to have the ability to express things that are most important. And I think this is where the whole conversation around pronouns slides in. A lot of people think, well, what's the big deal? Just be nice, use the pronoun someone wants you to use. And I can understand that argument. There is something to be said for courtesy and respect. I think where a lot of people have a problem, particularly on kind of the right side of the political spectrum, is that by using pronouns, you're not just referring to the person you're talking to, or talking about, but there's contained within the pronouns a statement about reality.
Yeah, you're at least acknowledging that their view of reality in that pronoun is legitimate.
Yes.
And that's where I've heard a number of conservative people basically saying they'll use those pronouns privately with the individual, kind of as that sign of respect, but they won't do it publicly because that's a public declaration that they accept that reality.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, so that'd be that. I can understand that distinction. I think I probably wouldn't go that direction. It's just on a principle basis.
Yeah.
But I think this is where I think it's important to understand that people who aren't wanting to use someone's pronouns, it is not because they want to be, you know, disrespectful or rude or something like that. I think they're holding on to a deeper fundamental principle about reality, or at least how they perceive reality.
Yeah.
That there is only a he and a she pronoun, because that is all that the human race has. And people can't swap back and forth.
It's not interchangeable.
No. And so you might think it's so simple, but I think it captures within that such a simple word, a reflection of reality. You are saying that this person is a he, which is a female. And if you don't believe that, why should you be forced to say it?
Yeah.
Which is what so often is happening now, is that you have compelled speech laws instead of hate speech, which says you can't say this. Compelled speech says you must say this.
Yeah. Those are that's two the direction Jordan Peterson has gone down, right, in a lot of his talking, is that compelled speech idea and how much worse that is than even restricting speech.
Yep. And then the fifth point for free speech is that free speech provides for individuals to think and decide freely. Now, this kind of builds up on some of the previous ones. And here is where I want to tie in the articles at the beginning there, particularly about the whole cabinet confidentiality. As individuals, in order to make a fully reasoned decision, we have to get all the facts. And again, if there's certain facts that aren't allowed to be spoken or brought up, that no longer are we able to kind of use that in our decision making process.
Yeah.
So in our ability to make decisions about what we want to do in life, there has to be a free speech component in which we can engage and learn about these different facts. And one big thing that people decide on is how they vote. And so at least in the kind of the Hinshaw case, the court is saying this is important for the public to know.
Yeah.
And part of that justification, I think, is because you as a public have voted for these officials and you will have a vote later on. And part of that decision has to be formulated through accessing these different facts that are out there. And so there has to be this, I think some balancing. I think there's room for confidentiality and national security things. It doesn't have to be out there on Facebook. You know, there's a reason why we keep nuclear codes secret. So there is space for that. But at the same time, that should be the exception. That you should have to be able to prove your case for why confidence overrules freedom of speech issues related to my right to kind of know in order that I can make decisions, especially as it relates to the public space. I think freedom of speech is a much bigger topic and significant issues than a lot of people perhaps think through. It's not just your ability to say stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's where a lot of people they kind of stop with it. It's freedom of speech is my ability to say whatever I want.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it.
I can put whatever is, yeah, freedom of speech is my right to say or put whatever I want on my Facebook.
Yeah.
And if that's it, then okay, I might be with you in the fact that, yeah, this is kind of a little frivolous. But the free speech factors into so much more that is necessary for a healthy, functioning, populist democracy, healthy government, and just human liberty to live out your life as you desire.
Yeah.
And so it's in that context. I just want to just quickly run through these, or at least one example coming up that's going to touch on free speech that's worth highlighting or bringing to your attention. Bill C-11 is in first reading. I think it's in first reading and it's still kind of going through committee processes, which is usually after second reading, but this is, it's a huge bill. I think it's something like 90 pages.
Oh, wow.
So in the last legislature, this is on the federal level, and before the election, there's Bill C-10. Bill C-11 is kind of the recapitulation of it. And what this bill does is it updates the Broadcast Act, and the Broadcast Act is what governs the CRTC. And so the CRTC is the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission. All right. Basically these guys govern whatever is broadcast out there. They kind of control, your cell phone networks and who gets what frequencies and what can be broadcast on your TV and radio and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
What Bill C-11 does is it wants to update that bill and bring social media and media streamers. So you think Netflixes and Twitters and Facebooks and Disney Plus and Amazon Primes, bring all that under the purview of the CRTC.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah. And so it's Bill C-11. It's an update of the Broadcast Act. Sometimes it's known as the Online Streaming Act. You might find it under that. And it really has two kind of components. One is to address online harms, and the other one is to address Canadian content. So just a little note on that second one. If you go to CTV or CBC Global, the CRTC says that they have to spend X amount of money and produce so many shows that has a certain amount of Canadian content on it.
You get the same thing on radio. They have to have a certain amount of airtime dedicated to Canadian artists. So there's a restriction to ensure that we are producing Canadian content. And part of that is forcing radio and TV to accommodate it.
Yeah. So, yeah. So this is where all those CBC Canadian shows that you don't watch come from. That's where, this is why they have to make that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because of rules like the CRTC. So one thing they want to do is like, they want to get Netflix and Amazon Prime and Disney Plus to produce a certain amount of Canadian content. And the argument is this will kind of level the playing field at least a little bit. At least that's one kind of component.
I see this more likely pulling down the amount of content on those services to create the right balance than producing more Canadian content to bring it up.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Get your percentages and then you can raise them all up. But yeah, it's, I don't know. I've never been too captivated by much of the CBC Canadian content that's out there. As far as I'm concerned, if you put out a good show, regardless of where it comes from, people are going to watch it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And every once in a while you hear a show.
Sure.
Is a Canadian show. It's like, oh, well, cool. We actually produce some good stuff.
We have the ability to do it.
There's definitely some out there, but forcing it and forcing the networks to carry it, telling them if you don't carry a certain amount of Canadian content, you won't be allowed to operate in our country.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like an effective or very free method.
You're just gonna get the required Canadian content in whatever form it takes. It's not gonna be quality. It's just, if you need to hit a certain quantity, you're gonna do that, and it's not necessarily gonna be a quality based thing. But just kind of as a humorous component of this, how do you define Canadian content? So there's an article by Michael Geist, and he has a whole bunch on this kind of Bill C-11 stuff and related topics. And the bill itself is really hard to digest, but this website, he's a university professor. I forget the university he's part of, but he has a whole bunch on this topic. And one post that he has is on Canadian content. So on Amazon Prime last year, they did a document series, kind of five part series, tracking the Toronto Maple Leafs over a season. Not Canadian content.
Why not? That's ridiculous.
But there is a documentary called Gotta Love Trump. That is considered Canadian content.
Oh, wow.
There is, like Turning Red is not considered Canadian content. And that's the recent Pixar movie, and it takes place entirely in Toronto.
Right. Yep.
So that's not Canadian content. But there is a movie out of Norway. It's in the Norwegian language, and it is Canadian content because of certain treaties that we've signed. Oh, no. So, yeah, this whole idea of what Canadian content is not very straightforward. But that's not the main argument. The main topic. I just thought that was just a nice example of how convoluted this whole regulation system is that we have in place. But no, to get back to the free speech issue, this Bill C-11 has actually garnered a lot of criticism, like widespread criticism, which is kind of a little bit of a surprise. And I think it caught the government a little off guard too. So basically this Bill C-11 would kind of put government in control of the internet. And that alone should be a scary statement. Now the politicians will say that this exempts, you know, you uploading videos about your family vacation or your cat videos or something like that. It's like they actually literally refer to cat videos, not in the bill, but in their talking point. But it's a long bill. Maybe it's in there. I don't know. But they say it's not going to be included in kind of the sweep up of the internet. Though there are exceptions to that if your video is put on there and gains revenue. Like that's at least one example of where if and just, it doesn't take much to earn revenue online if you're really serious about it. So there are exceptions to exceptions, and in a 90 page bill, it's not hard to imagine how much. Let's just put it this way: do you feel that a 90 page bill would protect your rights more than a bill that just wouldn't exist in this context? I don't feel more protected by this bill. But again, Michael Geist has more posts on this. And so a couple months ago, the government provided a summary of consultations that they collected from a number of different internet companies and experts in this field, like big ones, like Google, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, from the consortium of Bell and Shaw, and like everybody. So they provide a summary of it, and the summary said that there was actually a lot of criticism related to this bill, or at least the proposed bill, because I don't think it was presented this time, but the proposed bill. And so they're going to do a rethink. But in the summary, they didn't actually provide the submissions, these consultation submissions. So what ends up happening, Michael Geist has to file an access to information request to get the submissions. And he gets over 1,000 pages of submissions. And so, yeah, here's a government. So do you feel more secure with your government? Do you trust your government more when they're trying to present a bill on controlling the government, and yet you have to go through legal means to access this information that they wouldn't give out freely? So that's just a thought in the back of the mind there. But like everyone is critical of it to varying degrees. But most notably, Michael Geist is going to quote from the submission from Twitter. Now, this is pre Elon Musk Twitter.
Yeah.
That is talking here. And so he says the most notable submission came from Twitter, which warned that the proactive monitoring of content envisioned by the government sacrifices freedom of expression to the creation of a government-run system of surveillance of everyone or of anyone who uses Twitter. So basically, the government wants these different social media groups to proactively monitor your posts. So basically, they're kind of government-mandated policing.
Yeah.
So even the most basic procedural fairness requirements you might expect from a government-run system, such as notice or warning, are absent from this proposal. The requirement to share information at the request of the Crown is also deeply troubling. So they're reacting to this proposed bill that the government will give notice to Twitter about things, what they want them to do with, say, a post, without any notice, without any consultation. That the government is here. It says the requirement to share information at the request of the government is also deeply, deeply troubling. So they're asking, you know, Facebook for information.
Yeah,
and that's what this is part of what this bill wants. It gets even better. Geist continues. It says further, it didn't pull any punches with respect to the government's website blocking plans, literally liking it to China, North Korea, and Iran. So here's Twitter speaking now. Quote: the proposal by the government of Canada to allow the Digital Safety Commission, or Digital Safety Commissioner, to block websites is drastic. So this Bill C-11 would set up a Digital Safety Commissioner, and you'll see later on this critique. He's not subject to anybody. He's independent. Man. He's independent. So there's no judicial review. There's no oversight. Besides what is normally oversight by, what we normally have oversight with CRT or with the CRTC. Right, so continuing, it says people around the world have been blocked from accessing Twitter and other services in a similar manner as one proposed by Canada by multiple authoritarian governments, China, North Korea, and Iran, for example, under the false guise of, quote, online safety, impeding people's rights to access information online. So Twitter just literally compared this Bill C-11 and its provisions to places like China and North Korea. This is Twitter. This is pre-Elon Musk Twitter.
And this this podcast is brought to you by whatever VPN you want to find now, because we're living under Chinese or Iran governing authorities.
It's a good thing we're getting this out now. It continues on. Further, there are no checks or balances on the commissioner's authority. Again, this is from Twitter submission. Yeah. So they review the proposal. This is their reaction to it. So there's no checks or balances on the commissioner's authority, such as the requirement of judicial authorization or warnings to service providers. So they don't have to go through a judge's permission to request information from a service provider. The government would be extremely mindful of setting such a precedent. If Canada wants to be seen as a champion of human rights, a leader in innovation and net neutrality globally, it must also set the highest standards for clarity, transparency, and due process in its own legislation. So later on, I think he makes the argument, or I read it somewhere else, is like, okay, someone's going to look at China and Korea, or North Korea, and say, so let's put it this way, who's going to look to China and North Korea and say, yeah, I want those internet policies? No one's going to do that. Oh, there's Canada. Let's do what Canada is doing. But Twitter is saying that's just like what China and Iran are doing. And so here it's like, if you want to be a leader, other countries are going to look to Canada and maybe even use this as an example of, okay, let's do this now.
Yeah.
That puts Canada not only in a threat to its own citizens, freedom of speech rights, but also perhaps a threat to people in other countries that would say, oh, Canada's a good place. They're a democracy. They got freedom of expression in their constitution. This must be a good way of doing things. Well, let's do that over in our country. So yeah, I put that out there just to make you aware of what's going on here, that freedom of speech is a significant thing that we need to be aware of. And cherish, just like we read last time. It's like your rights, even though they're on paper, they don't stay there. They can evaporate unless you fight for them. And so this is something that you might want to bring to the attention of your MP. That this is not something that you're interested in. The Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs have issues with this bill. Like these would be people who are against anti-Semitism. The National Council of Canadian Muslims had issues with this bill. Safe Harbor Outreach, which works with the LGBTQ and BIPOC community, they had issues with it, like to varying degrees, but no one was like, yeah, this is two thumbs up kind of thing.
Yeah, so even some of the organizations that may traditionally be grouped in with the types to be in favor of this, of restricting some of the freedom of expression, even they're saying this is not something we want.
Yeah. The Canadian Center for Child Protection, even we strongly urge the government to reconsider the optics of directly linking the funding of these offices to the very entities which are being regulated. So this bill would also require these social medias would require them to fund the process that we just talked about.
Right. Yeah.
So they're concerned about that. That's something to keep in mind. Throw out some extra names for you. Look out for Bill C-18. This is the Online News Act. This is the act that would require Google to sign, places like Google and Facebook to sign agreements with news providers.
Yeah.
In order to, because their claim is that Google benefits from providing you links to said news articles, and so they should the Globe and Mail should get a kickback from that service. When it seems like it's really a mutual beneficial.
Yeah.
And really the digital, like the independent digital news services have flourished because of the free equal access to all this. Links.
These other traditional media forms need to catch up.
Yep.
They're fighting for it.
Yeah. And then, so that's Bill C-18. And then later on, it hasn't been announced yet, or at least formally announced, the Online Safety Act. I think this is the one that was kind of proposed or talked about as the kind of the anti-hate speech. This would be more, they would kind of update some of that, maybe that language to kind of online issues. So there's some topics out there that need to be kept in mind when we're seeing about some of this conversation around free speech. It's not just, who's regulating Twitter, but more importantly, what kind of laws are being put in the books in our own countries.
Yeah.
That we need to be aware of. And so hopefully this kind of highlights both the significance of free speech and kind of some of the potential threats that are taking place in our own country. All right. I know we're getting long, but I do want to pick up, I want to do one more thing. I kind of want to do this on a regular basis. Do a little bit of a movie review. Didn't get to it last week. Father Stu was on the docket for last week. We didn't get to it. I do recommend it. It's a faith film with language, like that kind of language. Yeah. And so if you are upset and can't take any more of that kind of preachy, soapboxy faith-based films, and you want something that puts faith kind of in a more realistic, real world setting, I think there's something to be said for the movie called Father Stu. It's starring Mark Wahlberg and Mel Gibson are the leads in that one. The movie this week, though, is really for everyone. The movie I went and watched this last week was The Bad Guys. And it was made much cheaper by the fact that I've like saved up two and a half years worth of scene points. And so I was able to take like the whole family out and a couple of friends as well out to the movies and didn't have to pay for any tickets. But The Bad Guys is based upon on a kids book series I actually haven't read through, haven't got the kids. But it's kind of like Zootopia. So you have animals, but in this world, you also have actual human characters as well. But The Bad Guys focuses on this kind of group of criminals led by Mr. Wolf. And there's Wolf, there's a tarantula, there's a shark, a piranha, and a snake. I think that's the bad guys when that's the title characters. And so it starts off with them pulling a heist and being all cool about this. And what the movie really is, if I put it into kind of encapsulated form, it's basically Ocean's 11 as a cartoon. It has this kind of cool suave factor to it, at least particularly Mr. Wolf. And it's animated in the style of similar to like Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, kind of that comic, that kind of comic book look.
Yeah.
It's kind of a blend between what you would kind of think of a Pixar look and a comic book. It's really, really nice to look at.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's beautifully animated. But in the midst of one of the heists in the beginning of the movie, Mr. Wolf inadvertently does a good thing and he experiences a pleasant feeling from that.
Oh no.
Yeah. And so that kind of ends up playing out, blossoming throughout the rest of the movie. This kind of notion of goodness kind of flourishing up within him.
So the bad guys don't necessarily want to be the bad guys anymore.
We'll see. We'll see. I think I think this is all in the trailer. They get caught and then they scheme to pretend to be good guys in order to be bad guys. And so that's the kind of the toss off into the rest of the movie. The nice thing about The Bad Guys is it's just a really fun story. It has, of course, good fart jokes for the 9-year-olds and 13-year-olds and, you know, that kind of humor. I know my 9-year-old loved that component of it. If that's not your thing, but whatever. Who doesn't like? Anyways, I won't harp on that anymore. But the nice thing about this is it doesn't have that typical messaging that I've got so tired of this whole be yourself messaging, this be whatever you want to be, or you can be whatever you dream you can be. This is kind of the more Zootopia kind of messaging that was in that movie. This one here actually kind of, it plays against the idea of identity politics or identity groups, where, you know, because I am part of this group, I act in this way, or at least I'm perceived in this way.
Yep.
So one of the interesting components is that notice that these bad guys is they're a wolf, piranhas, snakes, tarantula, and a shark. Now, do you think of those guys, if you're casting a movie, if you're typecasting these guys, would they be the bad guys or the good guys? Sharks, wolves, these are bad characters.
They're always the bad guys.
They're always, yeah, that's who they are. Or is it? This is the one thing that these characters are end up wrestling with. It's like the society sees a wolf and says, that's a bad guy.
Yeah.
And so the wolf says, well, that's kind of what I am. There's no point in changing. Even if I did change, no one changed, no one would believe me. And so the movie plays out of that kind of dilemma. Do they stick to this kind of group stereotyping that's been placed upon them, or are they able to break free?
Right.
And whether, and you know, how much do they care about public perception or not? Of whether they can change.
Yeah.
And so it's really a fun movie. It has lots of excitement for the kids, but I think it has a message that to me is so much better than a lot of this kind of more millennial kind of woke thinking. Be whatever you want to be kind of thinking. That's no, you can't be whatever you want to be. I will never be a Sidney Crosby. I'll never play in the NBA. You know, I'll never be these things, but I can be the best of whatever I am put here to be.
Yeah.
And so it has a nicer, and it doesn't hit you over the head with this as well. It really is a fun movie. Just go watch. You don't have to worry about so many different messages coming out at you that you don't have to be concerned about. I would really recommend The Bad Guys, a good one for the whole family. All right. So with that, we've made it to the end. Thank you for hanging out with us. I appreciate it. As always, I'm always curious about your feedback. So by all means, leave a note, leave a comment, email me, contact us with your thoughts and conversation. Again, let's use this freedom of speech. If we don't use it, no one's gonna be concerned about pulling it away. So that's my guilt trip for getting comments. But anyways, thank you for joining us this evening. Or whenever you're watching this or listening to this. My name is Brian Constein.
And I'm Michael Rowland.
And this has been Penhold Talk Radio.